This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Loss, mourning, rabbits, gardens, and gas stations. In this part of the program, we'll let commentator Bailey White combine those elements and more into her 10th annual Thanksgiving gift to all of us, an original story.
The boy's name was Ned. Ever since his mother had died of breast cancer a year ago, he'd lived with his grandmother, who thought up worthwhile projects for him, such as charting rainfall amounts and raising rabbits for meat. To get his mind off it, she said. But lately, Ned had been spending most of his spare time sitting at the picnic table down at the new Sitco gas station and cigarette outlet, watching women vacuum out their cars. When his mother had died, the counselor had given his grandmother a little book to read about the process of grief, dividing it up into 5 stages. And she didn't see how hanging around down at the gas station fit into a stage of grief. "You're loitering," she said. Ned wasn't sure what loitering meant, but he didn't like the sound of it. It seemed like it must have something to do with the way he sometimes felt about certain women and the vacuum cleaner, when they'd go down under the back seat with it, or crawl around in the backs of the station wagons, and whoomp, that satisfying sound when the vacuum would suck up a candy wrapper or the cellophane off a cigarette pack. In fact, at certain moments at the Sitco, Ned would feel so happy he could hardly believe it. The flap of the little plastic flags, the angle of the morning sun, a whiff of gasoline and hot dogs, Nancy, the itinerant gardener who was always nice to him, digging in the corner flower bed, and Gabby broadcasting country like it used to be on the radio saying, "And now a new hour begins on 93.3, 10 o'clock a.m. That was the best part, when the nurse would drive in to fill up and vacuum out her car. Every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, he could count on it. First, she would take out the floor mats, shake them out, and rub them on the grass. Then she would take everything out of the car and line it up in neat, straight rows along the curb. A Georgia Atlas and gazetteer, a pair of sneakers, a blue and white ice chest. She would open all the car doors and dig in a little red purse for the quarters. Then the roar of the vacuum would drown out the country music. Ned loved the graceful way she shook out the loops in the hose and stepped over it so carefully in her white shoes. She vacuumed around the door frame, a place most people missed, and she always vacuumed the whole car on 2 quarters. The nurse was never in a hurry, and sometimes she would sit down at the picnic table beside the little flower bed and talk to Nancy. Ned kept weekly records about the nurse in a black notebook. Arrival and departure times, contents of car, number of gallons and purchase price of gas, he learned from observation. But the list he kept in the back of the notebook, miscellaneous facts of interest, he got from eavesdropping. Her birthday was in June. Her sister raised prize-winning goldfish. She had once owned a dog named Happy with a skin problem. One Saturday in January, the nurse asked Nancy, "How do you root a rose? This old lady I'm nursing has a red rose in her backyard in full bloom since Christmas." "You have to wait till spring," said Nancy. "This old lady won't last that long," said the nurse. "Red rose blooms all year," Ned wrote in his notebook. On a February Saturday, when Nancy was putting in some cool weather plants for spring, the nurse sat down by a flat of lamb's ears on the picnic table. "I never saw a gray plant," she said, feeling the soft, floppy leaves. "Stachys," said Nancy. "It can't take the heat, though. I used to have a boyfriend whose earlobes felt just like this," said the nurse. "I think his name was Dave." "Dave," Ned wrote in his black notebook, and he thought about it a long time. "Dave." Another Saturday, when the vacuum shut off, the nurse didn't hang up the hose right away, but stood there listening to country like it used to be on the radio, Keith Whitley singing, "I'm Lonesome Without You." "This is my favorite song," the nurse said to Nancy. "Oh, the road is rough and rocky since the day I last saw you," sang Keith Whitley. "Another's won your heart forever, and I'm lonesome without you." "Listen to this banjo part right here," said the nurse. Nancy stopped digging and they stood there, Nancy leaning on her shovel and the nurse dangling the pleated hose. Then Keith Whitley, "My hope is now that you'll be happy with this new love that you have found. But if you should ever feel unhappy, remember me, I'll be around." "That's sad," said Nancy. "That old boy's just fooling himself, 'cause you know she ain't coming back." Then the song was over, the nurse started coiling up the hose, and an advertisement came on the radio for an herbal breast enlargement treatment. Breast was another one of those terrible words like loiter that seemed to mean way too much. Ned felt his face burning. "If you are like many women, you may not be happy with the way your breasts look and feel," said the announcer in a loud, penetrating voice. Suddenly, Ned couldn't stand it. He stood up and stammered, You don't know that for sure. She might not be gone forever. She might come back." The nurse stared at him, beginning to smile, and Nancy grabbed him and hugged him tight. She smelled like pine straw. "You're cute," she said. "You just keep on thinking that way, sweetie." "I know you from somewhere," said the nurse. "Favorite song," he wrote in his notebook, "I'm Lonesome Without You." On a Saturday in early March, the nurse was almost 10 minutes late. She filled up with gas, 14.54 gallons. But on this day, she didn't vacuum out the car. "Dying is hard work," she said. "I am exhausted." She lay down on the bench of the picnic table and scratched around in her hair with all her fingers. Nancy brushed off her hands and rooted in her pocketbook for quarters. "Ned, go get us a Coca-Cola. We could all use a break," she said. When he got back, they were sitting across from each other with their elbows on the table talking about colors. "Sometimes when I'm this tired, I close my eyes and I just see blue," said the nurse. She closed her eyes. "It looks like I'm on a Caribbean cruise," she said. Her mouth took on a different look, like a sleeping baby's mouth, as if with her eyes closed it didn't know what it was doing. Ned stared at her, memorizing little things he would write down later. How her eyelashes lay against her cheek, how a piece of hair curled in front of her ear. "Nothing but sky and water," she said, "and it's all my favorite color, blue." Over by the ice machine, a woman scratched off a lottery ticket. A jaybird lit in the Vitex tree. "This is important," thought Ned. "Rabbit manure is the best fertilizer in the world," said his grandmother. She was raking around under the rabbit hutch while Ned tacked wire on a new pen. His grandmother was always trying to teach him that life is a cycle, that nothing ever really ends, that it all just goes around and around and around, and rabbit manure was the proof of it. "After we get these rabbits in the freezer," she said, "we'll take this rabbit manure, spread it around the rose bush, and step back. That rose bush will jump up out of the ground. Life just takes on a new form." Ned saw this as an opportunity. "What's a red rose that blooms in December?" he asked. "Louis Philippe," said his grandmother. "Now why in the world do you want to know a thing like that?" "Somebody at the Citgo wants to know," said Ned. "Citgo," said his grandmother. "Citgo? Have you been loitering down there at that Citgo?" On the next Saturday morning, as he sat at the picnic table with his notebook, watching Nancy prune the Vitex tree, his grandmother pulled up by the gas pump. She sat in the car for a long time, looking around like a private eye. Then she got out. "Is this boy bothering you?" she asked Nancy. "Is he making you nervous with all that loitering?" "Look on the door," she said to Ned, and she read out loud, "No loitering." All he could think of was how he did not want the nurse to drive up right then. And all he could see was Nancy standing in the flower bed staring at his grandmother. And all he could feel was his grandmother's fingers digging into his arm. And all he could hear was that terrible word, loiter, loiter. And something else, a remembered sound that came back sometimes. His mother's long, sucking, ratchety breaths coming again and again, strangled and desperate, till he had to cover up his ears. But then Nancy came up to them, reaching out a hand. "Please don't think that," she said. "He's not loitering. He keeps me company and helps me with the flower bed." After that day, to make it the truth, Nancy put him to work spreading mulch. When the nurse finished vacuuming the next Saturday, Nancy said, "My new helper." The nurse came over and sat down at the picnic table. "I wish I had a little flower garden like that," she said. "Why can't you?" said Nancy. "Everybody should be able to have some kind of little garden." "I live in a third floor apartment," said the nurse. She sat backward on the bench and leaned against the table. "Just a little square of ground," she said, "in a quiet place where I could go and sit sometimes." In the next Saturdays, they planted the summer garden. Nasturtiums, marigolds, and zinnias. Nancy taught him names: rattlesnake root, butterfly ginger, false dragon head. And she told him what would happen in the summer and then in the fall. "Your best gardening is always in the future," she said. Sometimes there would be some plants left over in the flat, and Nancy would give them to him, their roots wrapped in wet newspaper. "You take these home to your grandmother," she said. It was time to separate the rabbits. They were going by book, Raising Rabbits for Fun and Profit. "You will find great satisfaction in efficiency," said his grandmother, grabbing the big old buck rabbit and wrestling him through the little swinging door of the next pen. Soon the female rabbit began lining the box with fur, and one day the nest was heaving with little pink squirmers. "See that?" said his grandmother. "Life marches on." Then it was summer, and the marigolds and zinnias spread and shaded out the weeds. There was plenty of rain, and for a while there was nothing to do in the flower bed at the Sitco, and Nancy only came every other Saturday to pick up trash. Even as early as 10 o'clock, it was too hot to sit at the picnic table and visit. So the nurse just waved from the vacuum machine. "Where's your helper?" she called. "Off somewhere growing up, I guess," said Nancy. "Uh-oh," said the nurse. The baby rabbits grew a little soft white down, and their eyes opened. "This is a good mama rabbit," said Ned's grandmother. "Look how fat they are." But all Ned wanted to do was study the lists in his black notebook and make his plans. He bought chart paper, 1 inch equals a foot, and he drew it over and over until he got it like he wanted. A flower garden with a neat edge, straight rows, a smooth path, and a little place to sit. When he got it right, he colored it in with crayons, gray-blue for the border of lamb's ears. "Dave," he said to himself, "Dave." Then the real work started. It was hot, and there was a lot of walking and hauling. Blue bottles from the recycle center, bags of rabbit manure, the trays of little plants, and worst of all, the bag of sacrete. The ground was as hard as a rock. Nothing ever got dug there but graves. Ned had to wait until a soaking rain before he could get a spade in it to dig out the centipede grass. He cut his finger breaking up the bottles. He stuck himself on the prickles of the rose bush, and one day he got into a wasp nest. There were unforeseen difficulties. He mixed the sacrete too watery in his first batch before he learned better, and the blue apostrophe in I'm sank out of sight. He had to shift the bath over a foot from his plan. An old Stringer great-grandfather's grave marker would have stuck up between lonesome and without. And he had to plant a taller variety of marigolds to hide his mother's marker. It stuck up too high and looked too shiny. But finally he took an aluminum lawn chair out there and set it up on a little circle he'd paid for it at the head of the bath between the Louis Philippe rose bushes. He sat down with his elbows on his knees. It felt just right. "Your best gardening is always in the future," Nancy had said, and finally in early fall it seemed like the future was here. Even the weeds in the roadside ditches looked like a garden. Foamy goldenrod and blue ageratum, nodding heads of summer farewell and yellow spires of crotalaria, all twined around with a twinkling red of cardinal vine, everything putting on a last show before the frost. At 8 weeks of age, the rabbits should weigh between 4 and 5 pounds and are ready to harvest, Ned's grandmother read in Raising Rabbits for Fun and Profit. "Now this won't be bad at all," she said to Ned. "They won't suffer." But it was a Saturday morning, and while his grandmother was rummaging around in the kitchen drawer looking for gallon-sized freezer bags, Ned sneaked off to the sitco. "Well, look at you," said Nancy. "I bet you've grown 4 inches. "Where's your black book?" asked the nurse. "I want to show you something," said Ned. "Well, sure," said Nancy. "Right now?" said the nurse. "What is it?" said Nancy. "We have to drive there," said Ned. "How far?" said the nurse. The graveyard was way down 93 from the sitco, past Ned's house, then left on the Stringer Road, across from the cornfield at the Ganey Crossing. They rode in Nancy's truck, the nurse and Nancy in the front, and Ned in the back with shovels and rakes and bales of pine straw and plastic pots, calling out to Nancy where to turn. It was an old graveyard, mostly Ganey's and Ned's family, the Stringers. Years ago there'd been a fence around it, and a fancy gate with wrought iron lilies and leaves. But now most of the fence was gone, and 2 big old live oak trees had crumpled the gate. In the front of the graveyard there was a chipped-up urn lying on its side, and a few weather-beaten angels and lumpish lambs, and old Ganey grave markers every which way like snaggled teeth. But in the Stringer plot, where a low granite wall framed in a little square of ground, you couldn't see the graves for the flowers. Mounds of golden lion's ear, sweeps of pink and white chrysanthemums, nodding silvery heads of summer farewell, and yellow swamp daisies flopping over the edge. Right down the middle of it, bordered with lamb's ears, ran a narrow paved path with chips and shards of blue bottle glass set in the concrete to spell out the words, "I'm lonesome without you." And at the end, between 2 red rose bushes, an aluminum chair. It was hard to know what to say about it, and they just stood there staring. The nurse was the first one to speak. "Now, isn't this the prettiest thing?" she said. "Your mama is lucky to have had a boy who loved her enough to do all this." He had thought she would understand after all those Saturdays. But in the end, Nancy was the one who remembered the blue of the Caribbean cruise, Dave's ears, the banjo solo, the little quiet place to sit. Nancy grabbed Ned and hugged him around the head so he couldn't hear all that was said. "It's for you," she said to the nurse in a whisper. Ned pulled loose and tried to talk. "It was you," he said. "You were the one. You came that night when she was breathing like that. You came. You were the one who stopped her suffering." The nurse sat down in the chair. Just like he planned, the little blue glass mosaic banjo he'd set into the concrete fit exactly between her feet. but she didn't seem happy about it. "That wasn't me, honey," she said. "It was just her time. That wasn't me, that was Brother Morphine that stopped her suffering." She stood up and brushed herself off as if there might have been trash in the chair. "I'm not an angel, I'm just a hospice nurse," she said. When they got back to the sitco, a man was mad because the nurse had left her car blocking the vacuum, and while she tried to explain, "I didn't know we'd be gone that long," Nancy sat Ned down on the picnic bench with his back to the nurse and squatted down in front of him with her hands on his knees. "She's used to doing for other people," Nancy said. "She's not used to having other people do for her. She's not ungrateful. She just wasn't ready for such a thing. It took her by surprise." But Ned couldn't listen to all that, and on the way home, he started crying. He cried and cried just like a baby. He couldn't stop. At first, his grandmother thought it was the rabbits and went on and on about never-ending cycles. But when he still didn't stop after supper and way on past bedtime, she decided it must be one of those stages of grief she'd read about. "Well, finally," she said. And she was right in a way. Life did just march on and on. The first freeze came in about a week, and that was the end of the garden. Over the winter, the concrete path cracked into pieces. Ned hadn't known how thick to make it. The polished side of his mother's marker with her name and the dates lost some of its shine, and lichen sprouted on the rough backside, so it started to blend in with all the other stringers and gainies. Centipede grass is an aggressive spreader, and it sent out runners across the walkway until by August you could only see a few little chips of the blue here and there shining through the grass that used to say, "I'm lonesome without you."
Bailey White lives in southern Georgia. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.